Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006. Thank you.
Well, good evening, and we hope that you have enjoyed a brief musical interlude following our commercial for the book, the very, very popular book, a very insightful book, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. And the reason why it's popular is because it actually touches on many of the issues and concerns that our people, young and old, Black people, are facing today. And the reason why it's insightful is because it contains the insights, the guidance, advice, and wisdom of a number of great African-American leaders, going all the way back to Reverend David C. Walker in the 1820s, who was a prominent free Black man who had been given his freedom and moved into an environment where he was free to publish his opinions concerning the horrors and the evils of enslavement of people, especially our people. And one of his famous writings that is still a classic in literature is David Walker's Appeal. And quotations or extracts from David Walker's Appeal are included in the book Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, as well as extracts from other leaders such as Frederick Douglass, who preceded Booker T. Washington as the acknowledged leader for the rising African-American community coming out of slavery. And there's also a selection of extracts from the teaching of Booker T. Washington, who is the keynote speaker in the book. But following him, of course, there was Marcus Garvey. And then following in the footsteps of Marcus Garvey in the early 1930s all the way up to the mid-1970s was the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And during that time, we had two other great leaders, among others, but two other especially well-known great leaders, Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. And then following the death of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we had the Honorable Imam Wallace D. Muhammad, the son of Elijah Muhammad, and then picking up the banner of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and to some extent even picking up the banner of Imam Wallace D. Muhammad by instituting Islamic rituals, the Friday Jummah service, and encouraging the five daily prayers in the mosque under his leadership, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And so the book doesn't contain teachings of Minister Farrakhan because by rights they are a reflection of the teaching of his teacher, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. But we do mention him in the book because of the work that he has done in reforming hundreds of thousands of African-Americans under his leadership since he reinstituted the structure of the old Nation of Islam in 1978, 40 years ago. So we have to give credit where credit is due. Imam W.D. Muhammad told the people that were desirous of continuing the work of his father to follow Minister Farrakhan before he passed. He gave them the green light, but he's 80-some years old, 85 years old next, or in May. So we know that he probably will live a little while longer. He looks like he's fairly well in health, but he said that he doesn't expect to live much longer. He has cancer, still has cancer. So we look forward to some other leadership evolving out of that organization that will be able to help, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad helped our people, and as Minister Farrakhan has helped our people, and also as Imam Wallace Muhammad has helped our people. Personally, myself, I'm a fan of the son, the young in terms of his relationship with his siblings, Ismail Muhammad, who I had the honor and pleasure of meeting in Chicago several years ago. And I was very impressed with his humility, and he's a very learned brother. I don't know much about his formal education, but I know that he speaks very, very articulately and eloquently. And so it's very possible that he may assume the head spokesperson role, the leadership role in terms of being a voice for the upliftment of Black people. But I say all this to say that the book, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, is a roadmap to help you understand the teaching of these great people that I mentioned. So again, we want to thank all of you who have joined us tonight. This what is known in the Christian world, in the Catholic world, as Holy Saturday, the day before Easter Sunday. And we're going to talk about that a little bit in the context of our topic for tonight. Our topic for tonight is, should the moral character of America's leadership, the moral character, M-O-R-A-L. Moral means behavior. It comes from the French word moray, and moray means a pattern of behavior or rules of behavior. And so the question we ask is, should the moral character of America's leadership be of concern to the citizens? In other words, should the way that the leaders behave in their personal, professional, political lives, the way they behave in general as people, should it be of concern to the citizens? And so we want to welcome all of you. Sister Valina, welcome to you, and to our co-hosts and co-moderator, Brother Dr. Halim Mustafa. We want to welcome you, and I have your mics off right now, but I'm turning them on at this time. So thank you for coming on tonight, and we'd like to, Brother Mustafa, since you're our co-host, we'd like to hear from you first, and then we want to turn the mic over to Sister Bain, and then I have a few comments while we wait for others to join us. So,
yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Good evening. Good evening, everyone. And I'm calling you from calling in from the remote site here in California, Northern California. And it's a nice weathery day, and folks is like getting ready for this barbecue right now here. So we're going to share some of that. Ooh, but I want to say the topic is a very much concern to this nation. And I would really put a lot of thought into it now. And I know that right now we have a leadership that's mentally unstable in terms of what has been diagnosed by people who have, you know, psychologists who haven't seen him personally, but just the behavior in terms of he's making it necessary that he does all these tweets as our leader. I mean, tweeting too much is like, I want to be seen and stuff, and he should actually be actually one who is running the country from a basis of encouraging the leadership to go forward and do themselves the public, and not necessarily him be tweeting all the time tweeting. So it's what it is causing contradictions in this country as he poses efforts to make people argue and people follow. And actually, I can give you some really hardline experiences with people who are common people who are having the attitudes now that are, they are like really arrogant. And I'm going to give you two examples, right? Now, I went into to a business, the catering business that's owned by a Caucasian man, and he seemed to be about 40-something. Now, I asked him, did he have any promo material on his catering business, and he had nothing at all written or anything that I can take with me, and that was my intention. So I said, well, you're in business, you don't have brochure. I thought you at least have a business. And he says, get out of here, in a very rude way. And it just kind of told me something. Now, I just heard him say it, and I turned around politely, knowing that he was an ignorant person speaking, because anybody who is in business want to have brochures, despite the fact that the internet is really out there. So anyway, I walked away knowing that he was really ignorant and anger. And then I had another episode yesterday morning. I was I was receiving a ride to the local bus train station so I can head to Oakland and Berkeley. And inside there where I had eaten breakfast, and I had done an effort of cleaning up the whole room where I was lodging and cleaned off all the tables, and I kind of swept the floor because I just don't like seeing trash around. And so now when I had my cereal and as I was getting ready to leave because the bus was taking off, a person came outside who happened to be white, and he says, "Next time you eat, clean off your table." Like he's telling me that he's a boss and he's a patient at this facility. And so it just showed me the level of ignorance, because these anger people now are tethering to the president's attitude. And so not only that, I want to say there are psychologists right now. I believe there's 27 of them have actually made the analysis that he has this certain behavior that might be even schizophrenic. So it's a lot more to be said, but this is, the leadership starts the ball rolling, and as they say in the business and in life, it rolls downhill, right? So that's my initial comments.
Okay, well, we want to thank you, Dr. Ali Mustafa. We want to welcome our and our regular panelists, Mr. Pianchi. How are you this evening, sir?
Doing fine. How are you doing?
Well, we're doing fine. It's been a good day, a sunny day here down in Augusta, Georgia. Really pleasant day. And we're welcoming you, and hopefully we'll have a good conversation. I do want to say this. You probably know the topic, but I want to reiterate it and say something about it. The topic is, should the moral character of America's leadership be of concern to the citizens? Now, Dr. Mustafa just talked briefly about the top leader, political leader. But when we are talking about leadership here, we're not just talking about the top political leader. We're talking about the leaders in education. We're talking about the leaders in religion. We're talking about the leaders in business. We're talking about the leaders in the media, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of these people that have a strong influence on the thinking of the citizens can be considered America's leadership. We're not just focusing on the political leader of the country, but we're talking about all of the people that have this kind of impact as leaders on the people. And so the question that we're asking is, should the moral character of these leaders or this collective leadership be of concern to the citizens? And I just want to say one thing about it. You know, every week I keep my ears and eyes open, looking at various news items on the internet news, where I basically get my news every day. But oftentimes I watch this show that comes on in the morning called The View with Whoopi Goldberg and several other women. And one of the women, someone I really admire, actually. I like her personally. There's something about her that resonates with me. And that's Miss Meghan McCain. I always admired her father, Senator John McCain. I guess one reason was because of the fact that he was a Navy officer, a fighter pilot, and he survived imprisonment in Hanoi Hilton in the war in Vietnam. And to me, that itself was a tremendous accomplishment, to be able to keep his head together and continue to have faith in America, that America would actually free him. And he went on to do great things as a U.S. senator. But his daughter has many of his characteristics. You know, she has her own mind. And she's a very strong supporter of President Trump, whereas her father seems to not really be very enthusiastic about him. And that's all right. But the thing that I'm mentioning here is that in a conversation, I think yesterday or the day before among these women view something that kind of made me question her thinking. As much as I like and respect her, she said that she didn't really care too much about, and I don't want to misrepresent what she said, but I got the impression that she was saying she didn't really care too much about the personal behavior of the president. She was more concerned about how he was dealing with some of the important issues, like the nuclear arms race with North Korea and the economic problems dealing with China's, trying to basically captivate America with these cheap goods, et cetera, et cetera. She didn't want to hear too much about the moral character of the president. She was wanting to talk about the good things that he was doing to try to make America strong again. And so that made me think. Well, let me just say this before you go on, Ms. Bianca. I'm going to tell the audience, I'm not one of these Trump bashers. I think Trump has the potential to become a great president. And I'm going to tell you why, and I'm going to make it really quick. Because America has had a bad habit for the last 70 years. And I say 70 years because I am 74 years old. So I came into my own as a student in school at the beginning of the early civil rights movement, during the time that the school integration movement was first getting off the ground back in the 50s. And I was part of the developing civil rights movement going all the way up through the 70s. And I began to realize that rather than to attack some of the real problems that should be laid at the feet of the African-American people, that Booker T. Washington was attempting to do by teaching character building and industrial education and getting set up as property owners in the communities, et cetera, that over the last 70 years, there's been a movement to try to just pamper the African-American people without making the community realize that every nation has to rise up by its own bootstraps. Every community has to support itself and come to the table with a handful of contributions. Otherwise, it won't be respected. And so, I see Donald Trump just recently, and I'm about finished, come up with a statement that I totally agree with, and that is that we need to encourage the development, and the government should support the establishment and development of vocational training schools, which some people call career education training schools, because everybody's not going to want to become an academic scholar. There are many people, when I went to high school, we had two departments, one for those that wanted to become academic scholars and others that wanted to go out and get jobs after high school and get started in their lives. And if I had chosen to do so, I could have become a professional electronics technician, which I eventually did, but I went to college first. But the point is that there are a lot of people that don't need to learn sociology and really don't even need to learn a foreign language in order to make $70 an hour and get qualified to get a nice home in a nice community and send their children to college if that's what they want to do. And that's what Mr. Trump was saying. And I agree with that. So as I say, there are some things that I've seen him do that I didn't understand, that I didn't really feel comfortable with. But the more I think about it, the more I realize that his voice is the voice of the hardworking heartland people of America. And they may not really be very favorable to those people that are living off of welfare or who are not really wanting to get down and roll up their sleeves and try to build good, strong, clean communities. But that's something that I can appreciate because I work very hard to have the nice home and the nice community that I have, and I don't feel very comfortable with people that are not even trying to do that. So again, my question is not just about him, although he will be included in the none of us are perfect, and maybe he's made mistakes, and maybe now he's grown up out of that particular adolescence that made him do the things he did. But the question just doesn't apply to him. It applies to all the leaders. So I didn't mean to go into such a long monologue, but I wanted to get my point out there very clear. So, Mr. Bianchi, thank you for being patient with me, and please go ahead.
Well, you know, I agree with what you just laid out. I highly supported and voted for Donald Trump, still supporting today. I voted for him because of his issues that I've never known a president to stick to the issues that he made during his campaign the way this man has done. And he's doing a good job so far. He bundled things up and put it into the laps of other leaders, Republicans in this case, and that which they've been hollering for the last 8 years. Once they get in their lap, then they begin to reveal exactly who they are. So, no, I highly support him. Think he's doing a very tremendous job. He could do better. He will do better. He's doing African-Americans a tremendous favor, too, especially with the tax reform. He's doing them a good favor with the immigration reform. Those immigrants that's here with work visas, once their visa expire, they should be sent back home. There should be efforts like what you made mention about the technical jobs, and also what he made mention to get young African Americans prepared for these jobs. Here in the city of St. Louis, we have a gentleman that worked for St. Louis University Medical Center, and he said that he's trying to get medical equipment technicians, trying to hire African Americans, but he's having a difficult time in doing that. We got good leadership out of him with the reopening of steel mills that have been closed down, where over 2,000 people lost their jobs. Now they're next to the infamous East St. Louis. Those people would be able to go back to work with the renovations and the updates that they're doing to the steel mill, immediately hiring 500 and orientating them on the new technology that would be used. And hopefully they get back over 2,000 like they was once before. And, you know, you talk about leadership. You can look at some of these cities like that ranks high in poverty rank. Detroit, number one, been Democrat since 1961. Buffalo, 1954, they were Democrat. Cincinnati, Ohio, in the mid-80s, 1989 for Cleveland. Miami, Florida, has been a Democrat forever. They rank 5-6 at St. Louis since 1949. El Paso, Texas, number 7 forever. But look at this. Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I didn't know this. They've been under Democratic rule since 1908. Philadelphia, 1952, and number 10, Newark, New Jersey, been under Democratic rule since 1907. Ranks number 10 in poverty rankings. So at some point in time, you would think that you would change the leadership that you have, especially if you're not getting the type of comparable results that you would expect. But then again, some people expect little out of who it is that they elect. I don't know if it's I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the lack of expectations out of themselves. Therefore, they have a lack of expectation out of the leaders that they put in office. And you know another thing, too. You talk about organization leaders and the character. I don't care about what somebody done 20 years ago, these allegations. But, you know, you got a lot of African Americans that follow Farrakhan. And look at his character. He had been doing racist things, calling white folks devils. Malcolm X called them canines. Elijah Muhammad did what he did with the young girls. And yet still nobody bring those things up. So if you're going to go out to Roy Moore on allegations, where surely you should also look at these others that you follow, but they don't do that. Thus is the double standard. But, I mean, that's just the way it is. But I agree with you. Leadership should be. And, you know, when you talk about poverty, that's just more than what meets the eye. You got problems with your schools. That's why I come out for school choice, which Betsy DeVos is highly in favor of, where parents can put their child where they think it's best for them. You don't want to keep your child in an environment where other parents don't hold their children to a certain level of expectation. Then what happens to your child? But if people want to indulge in those type of environments, well, let them do so. But those who think more highly and have better plans and outcome for their children, they should be able to take them and put them someplace else. And if you don't hold your school board that you elect, that runs your school district, accountable, then you are letting your leadership, in this particular case, they're just running amok. So it's a lot of things we could talk about along the lines of leadership. I think that, there is enough to get started on.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We're still waiting for some of our other regulars to come. So right now we're limited to just the three of us, actually, to be frank with you, that are participants on the call. And we know that we have a number of other people. I've been told by other people that they just go up and listen online because they don't want to actually say anything, but they want to listen. So we probably have others that would like for us to keep the conversation going just so they can listen. And that's fine. But I do want to ask Dr. Mustafa, would you like to add something to what you were saying already or respond to what Mr. Bianchi said? I know that there's some difference of opinion here, and that's one good thing about having this opportunity in this family room forum to actually be open and honest with each other so we can actually know what we're thinking. And maybe we may not agree, but at least we're talking about the issues. So, Dr. Mustafa, would you like to contribute more? Okay, Dr. Mustafa had mentioned you weren't on yet.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me? I had it on mute,
I
wouldn't
I thought you went over there to the sitting under the tree with some of the brothers eating barbecue. You said you were at barbecue.
Yeah.
I thought you left us
and congos. They playing congos. They have barbecue. They're doing this thing called the African connection with the cultural thing, all right? So it's really
yes,
good. We have
okay.
to be cultural. It's who we are. We have a culture. Some of us are conscious of that culture and its influence on us in world existence. But what I want to say, though, the double standard of what we see, and you know, the bottom line is the people who have been left held back have not been able to really mobilize forward despite all the diligence and historical things that have occurred. So there is not necessary, you know, a blame of saying that it's totally somebody else's fault. But when you look at how people kind of like culturally protect those from their culture, and like give you an example, like the president, and again, this is shocking for me because I was unaware that this girl who he had, she said that he had paid her money for sexual encounters, and he said, I think she lied, all right? So the idea is that she lied or she didn't lie. If you know, you say she lied, don't say, I think she lied. I mean, that's the question that really, to me, it says that there might be more that he knows, but the point is that... you know, how the moral and character really affects the country's leadership is critically important because it doesn't matter who's in the leadership. If there's a moral breach, then it's going to really be reflected and it's going to affect people, how they perceive the leadership. And it also gives an impression to the countries looking at us who might want to be competition that we are like morally bankrupt in terms of what the influence all across the board, including our youth and their behavior and the social media things we're doing. So there's a lot to be said about leadership and the country and our president and anybody else who's considers themselves a leader or who considers themselves a person of consciousness working with, like Ms. Bianchi talks about, the education area. That's really critically important. Now, most people are totally unaware of one thing that's happened in this country that really is very important to discuss. And I keep mentioning this because it's critical. Dr. George Washington Carver was the first African American to ever receive a federal holiday in his country. And he was the first American scientist and remains the totally only one who ever received this distinction under Public Law 290. All right, so this is something of the conversation to show people in the other culture who see Dr. Carver sometimes in a very low level, right? But he was the one that was given this federal day, not by black people's influence, because we weren't really active, but white people made the confirmation that what he meant to America in helping us in our economy, right? So without going into more detail on this thing, is nothing that Dr. King did negative, but I'm going to say this. He was not the first that has received a federal holiday or recognition from the perspective of January 15th being an annual thing. That was 41 years after Dr. Carver's Day was established. So I see on the calendar Dr. King's Day noted. I don't see on the calendar Dr. Carver's Day noted. And historical reference point, it was much more significant than the ideas of what I know he stood for and what Dr. King stood for. So if you put them side by side, I would think that the ideas of economics is more important to America than the idea of peace, freedom, and love, and save the world. That's all my comments for now.
Okay, that was very eloquently stated. As you are always very articulate in your statement of your positions, and we certainly appreciate it. Let me just interject something really quickly, and then I want to ask Dr. I keep saying Doctor, but I want to ask Mr. Bianchi if he'd like to respond to what you said. I believe that eventually every child, in order to survive and make its way in the world, has to grow up, and I don't just mean grow up from a few inches long to several feet tall, a few pounds heavy to even a couple of hundred pounds in some cases heavy. I'm not talking so much about that kind of growing up. I think that every child has to grow up and understand the rules of the road, so to speak, for being able to survive and make their way, his or her way, in this world of competition and struggle, and the knowledge requirement to be able to do things the right way to get the right results. I think that as people, the African-American people, even though we've had great leaders that have tried to guide our people, I think we are being stymied by the mass media, primarily the entertainment culture, including not just the music that's on the radios and the internet and downloadable and so forth, that are captivating our young people with what I would call real evil ideas. Just this whole concept of the men looking at the women like they're just objects for the men's sexual pleasure and not even respecting them enough. And you know, when I was growing up as a teenager, we weren't of the best behavior, but at least our love songs talked about love, whereas the songs of these young people, they really talk about abuse more than they talk about any type of sentiments and oppression of the females. Like, I won't repeat it because we probably have children and even grown-ups that won't be happy if I say the words, but, you know, I remember a song that came out, Ms. Bianchi, you might remember this as well, that the Temptations came out with back in the late 60s called My Girl, and Eddie Kendricks, I believe, was the lead singer, and he had a beautiful falsetto tenor voice, but the words of the song, which I think he wrote, were very, very insightful of the way that that generation of young black men felt. You know, when we had a girl that was gracious enough to us to give us her time and let us come over and sit with her in her family's home or take her out, we appreciated that. We really were happy that this girl was, even if we thought we were the gift to the campus. We still were happy if a girl got enough of us to let us take up her time and maybe become our steady girlfriend. That was back then, but now, you know, you see these shows or you hear this music where the guys are calling the women my bee, and I won't say the rest of it. You know, like this is some kind of animal that they have to trail them around that they can kick when they get ready or use to pet them when they get ready. And I said to myself, the music industry is promoting this kind of thinking as well as a lot of these movies that are being put out now. So when we talk about leadership, going back to that point, we have to realize that we have black people now that are involved in some of the higher echelons of music production and movie production that are not seemingly interested in reversing this trend, but they're actually exploiting this trend just so they can have several houses and an airplane and maybe three or four girlfriends around the country. And I'm saying, again, I wasn't just intending to talk about Mr. Trump. I'm saying that all of our people that we look up to for leadership, we should question, you know, not just their morality. And sure, somebody may have made a mistake 20, 30 years ago. If they've grown up and they've corrected their behavior, that's all good. But some of the people today that we look up to leaders don't act like they're even thinking about changing. How should we address that? How should we relate to these kinds of leaders? That's really my question. Anyway,
is that a general question?
That's a general question. Anybody can answer it. I thought Ms. Bianchi might want to say something because you had said some things, and I thought he might want to respond to what you said. But before he did, I just wanted to put that out there. But it's open. Anyone can respond.
Well, if he's not going to say anything, because I like hearing him talk, and his logic is certainly something that brings a lot of really straight talk on some things that need to be addressed. So, Ms. Falke, if you are not going to speak, I'm going to say something, unless you want to say something in reference to what was just presented. Then I will say something. Well, listen, it was known that I guess what Kennedy said, and I use that as a reference point, ask not what tragedy can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. And he talked actually talking in terms of what was patriotic duty. Now, I know that the moral character is very, very critical to serving patriotic duty. And if people are like right now, we want to separate it's kind of interesting. We want to separate the church or country from religion, right, or spirituality. And I don't see that people really understand that everything that we do morally has a spiritual influence, and anything that we do that is immoral, it has a spiritual influence, and one is positive, one negative, and some people are not even aware that the spiritual things that life has taught us, that it is the true reality. And so in terms of this, we don't have that that conveyance of information and people behaving at that level who are high profile and they are out there, you know, representing people in a devilish behavior, then the people, young people who are looking, they're going to imitate that, what they see. And so we don't have a counterpart yet to have the media to be controlled by people of moral interest outside of people who might want to just be church-based. See, we have to go beyond the church base and have the moral discussion or representation not be tied to an influence that's just you know, people who have the influence as a cultural group. I guess, you know, like, you know, you look at Easter, for example, that's coming up, I want to just say. In Easter, you know, I was so shocked to find out that they right now looking at the April Fool's Day on Easter Day. And I understand that it was 61 years ago that such this phenomenon happened. And still, though, it makes me say that this is almost like an oxymoron in terms of April Fools and then Easter Day and the idea of eggs with rabbits as an emphasis. And the logic is not there in terms of what we understand as chickens and eggs versus rabbits and eggs. Rabbits have live little ones, and eggs are by chicken, and they eventually hatch. So it's, for me, it's like really one that makes almost a little sense, April Fool's and Easter Day on the same day, because the idea that people are being fooled today, and they're being pushed in terms of a social behavior to what is, I understand it to be, the psychological aspects of how do you control the masses, right? So, a person with star level power, or people with the conscious presence, and I'll use a person like Muhammad Ali as a good example, right? He stood up on principle, even if he was against people that was from his own ethnic group or the own religious order. He would stand on high principles because him as a person only understood that it's important for the moral presence to get serious and not be playing around. Like in his time, you had people like Sly Stone and other high performer entertainers, but they were still silly in their behavior. So we have silliness in the social media to become a presence that is guiding our young people, black, I'm going to say that specifically, to start following this silly acting people who really don't have a common, let me say it, the comedy that is being presented is so silly, it just doesn't make sense. And that causes young people to start that silly behavior. And then, of course, it accepts the cursing and other things that destroys, people, normal relations, right? So it's a lot of stuff to be said, but bottom line, the leadership has to take another perspective, and we need a counterpart to what is the Hollywood freakazoid marketing. Freakazoid marketing. They're making every young lady a freakazoid, and that's why you have the young man talking about them as the bees, and the bees and the whole H's and the other kind of derogative things, instead of the idea that, what about your sister? What about your mother? How would you feel about them knowing you talking like this, knowing you having this public behavior, and are you representing the best of your best? Is that what, the best that we can do? That's the question. That's the concern that we're going to have to get to eventually. That's it, sir.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Yaki. We're here, the few of us, actually, tonight, just the three of us, and we have a topic that is probably worthy of a lot of people, but it's Easter weekend, and we certainly know that some of our regulars probably are participating in activities relating to Easter. But I did want to mention something. You talked about this issue of separation between the government and the religion, so to speak. But you know, it's ironic that the founding fathers of this country were men who were very deeply rooted in those that can be considered religious. The famous speech by Patrick Henry, where he announced, I don't know what others may take relating to the situation in Britain and what they considered to be unfair treatment, but he said, I don't know what others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death. And this announcement was made in the historic St. John's Church in Richmond, Virginia, where Thomas Jefferson and George Washington, the first and third president of the United States, were in attendance. And of course, the meeting was attended by a number of other prominent people whose names are not as well known as those three. But these people went to this church because this church represented what they considered to be the divine approval of the Supreme Being on their quest for freedom from injustice. So I said that to say that even though the same people, when they attended the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia several years later, and they said that they were not going to approve of having a state religion. The country would not establish a state religion. They never said that the country would be alienated from religion, and that's the reason why they have In God We Trust as part of the national symbol, the motto, along with a pluribus unum, one from many. But the point is that we have misinterpreted, and I think the courts, the liberal courts over the years, have misinterpreted the intention of the founding fathers when it came to having a standard of high morality or could be considered to be religious reference as part of our national culture. I think they had actually included a mandate when they did put things like In God We Trust as part of our national language. I think they gave our country a mandate to uphold a worship of a supreme being, regardless of what you may call the supreme being, and the belief, you know, that people should abide by certain universal principles of morality. So I think we should not allow ourselves to be sucked into this misconception. Government is not supposed to have a voice when it comes to good behavior. That's my point. That's what I wanted to say.
Well, you know, In God We Trust to put on money during the Eisenhower administration in the 50s. I think it was 1956. And the Constitution merely says that the government shall not respect any religion. And therefore, if people want to have religion, practice it, or not practice it, that's perfectly up to them. Freedom of speech is not free in private places. In government places, it is. So that's just the things that are in place that people misconstrue as time goes by. And, you know, as far as leadership and morals, I think that starts at home. From a tried, true, tested applications in this country and also around the world, you know, that the formula is for people to, your children, to get a good education, get a job, and get married, have children. I like this administration would have done away with one of those crippling effects of what has been infamously called Obamacare, making people get involved in commercial entities like insurance, and if they didn't, they was fined upwards of thousands of dollars. Now that's not so. That money can be used by families to pay off student loans, have down payments for their homes, to go to have education. So that money is best used in a person's pocket if they want to choose to get involved in some commercial aspect of society. That should be up to them. They shouldn't be forced to, especially if they're not utilizing a privilege that comes along with that effect. So that's my opinion on it. And as I said before, I'm happy to see these changes come into place. Hopefully that the other ones come into place. Good leaders should come from within. People should choose based on a concern, someone to go to either their local government, their state house, or the Capitol Hill to champion the changes that the people would like to see as it affects them. Not try to make things unbearable for others. These latest demonstrations that you're seeing that's occurring around the country and cities by these young people as it regards to gun laws. You got young people who can't legally buy weapons, but they want to pass laws that would otherwise restrict those who can legally buy from having what they choose. I think that's totally wrong. It goes to show you the inept knowledge that these young people have today on how political things work. I heard someone say that 16-year-olds should be allowed to vote. Well, maybe they should be allowed to be inscripted into the military service, too, to go and fight wars. But that's a whole different discussion. But, you know, you hear, see the tide and the ridicule and the rhetoric that's being thrown around. And hopefully cooler heads will prevail in the long run. That's all I got to say.
Well, I think that's very, very appropriate. I have had some questions concerning this youth movement that is a reaction, from what I can tell, to the Parkland, Florida school massacre. I do personally feel that there are people that are basically putting the children up to, because many of these children don't have driver's licenses and don't own cars, and for thousands of them to get to wherever they're going, Washington or wherever they're going, means that somebody has to be either driving them or paying for their plane or bus fare, and giving them spending change and place to eat or whatever when they get there. So I think it's not just about the children. I think there's a movement where they're being used as the front line soldiers, you might say, but in another time, in another place, maybe called cannon fodder for the wars that some other people are trying to promote. I think this whole idea of trying to increase the gun control can be misused by people that want to take America's constitutional freedom to have a gun in your home for your family's protection. I personally, myself, to be honest with you, I would not feel, not that it's going to keep me from having a home invasion, because the invader may not know that I have something in my house until the rude awakening, when he finds out that this is a armed home, guarded, defensive armed home. I would feel probably less secure if I didn't have that right and didn't take advantage of that right. I think many hundreds of thousands of Americans agree with me, but there are those who, for whatever reason, would like to disarm us and leave us prey to whatever would happen, as what happened to me before I became a home defense advocate. And I had a home invasion in the middle of the night and didn't find out about it until early the next morning, when, in the course of that invasion, my wife and I could have been killed. Because we didn't have an alarm system and I didn't have anything to protect us with other than a bat, maybe in my bare hands. So I'm just saying that there's a movement where the children may be pawns on the chessboard to deprive us of our safety and security that the Constitution has given us. But that's a conversation for another time, and if somebody wants to keep that conversation going. I think we've reached a magic hour where, in all fairness to our audience, it would be safe to stop. I know, Dr. Mustafa, you said that you were out there enjoying the closing part of the afternoon in California at a place where apparently there's a lot of festivity going on. Mr. Pacquiao, I'm going to probably just go ahead and use the rest of the evening to enjoy some family time. And I'm sure that there are other people that are listening who probably would be happy if we just said goodnight at this point. So unless anyone else wants to contribute, we're going to play a nice, cool jazz piece to close out with, and we'll be done for this week. But I do want to announce that we won't be on the air next week. We'll resume the week after next, and I'll just leave it like that. But we thank everyone who has joined. Go ahead, please. We did just have someone come on and join us. Sister Bain, we were going to close out. Brother Halim was on, but he dropped off. He was at a park or somewhere in the backyard, what we would say African culture, African-American culture event back in California. And he was generous enough with his time to come on and give us his comments. But we just excused him, knowing that he wanted to be with his friends out there in the park or wherever they were. And he just left us. Mr. Bianca's still on. But actually, I was getting ready to close out, actually. But before we do that, if you wanted to make any comment about the topic, sure, since you came on earlier, you are familiar with the topic, but would you like to address it before we close out?
I don't know what the topic was. I had to get off. I got on, but I had to get off, and I really didn't get to hear what the topic was. So I was just trying to
Let me reiterate the topic then for you. It's should the moral character of America's leadership be of concern to the citizens? And let me just put a caveat on the end of that. I'm not just talking about the president of the United States when I say America's leadership. I'm talking about the collective leadership that's composed of leaders in the schools, leaders in entertainment, leaders in the churches, as well as leaders in political groups and other types of organizations, people that have the position of honor and respect that exert an influence on the rest of the citizens, and particularly, and I didn't mention this in the topic, but particularly our young people, all of these leaders, when I say America's leadership, not just singling out the top political leader, I'm talking about the collective body of leaders. Should the moral character of America's leadership be of concern to the citizens? The topic.
Well, if you don't have morals in a society, then you have complete chaos, or it goes that way eventually, and it just causes so much corruption and so much discord. So I think that everybody should be concerned about morals, because what kind of civilization are we going to have if you don't have a moral conscience? And apparently the moral conscience in America is pretty low. If you really want to see the growth and development, you know what your mama said, if you want to see the growth and development of humanity, go take a look at the city. You know, we go look at the city. You have people in the city, a large city, all kind of deplorable things going on. Nobody's safe anymore. It's just horrible. So yes, we all need to be concerned about morals, and then you have, and look, the president is one, the teacher is having sex with the students, the priest and preacher is having sex with the youth. I mean, it's just a phenomenal. I don't know what to say about it. It's unbelievable. Yes, we need, I think America needs a moral rebirth, a moral conscience to come from somewhere. Our young people, they don't even want to be involved with organized religion anymore. They'll tell me, I believe in the Creator, but I don't want to get involved with organized religion. Because look at all the corruption that's going on. And the same thing in the school systems, and it's just in a very deplorable state of being in America. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Okay, well, you answered the question. The question being, should the moral character of America's leadership be of concern to the citizen and citizens? And you very clearly stated that it should be of great concern to the citizens. And I personally agree with you very strongly that we should, first of all, only select people to be our leaders and our guides that believe in teaching by their example. In other words, if we're going to, for an example, elect, I'm just using this in this example, I'm not pointing out anybody in particular, but if we're going to elect a lady, for example, to be the principal of a high school, and we're trying to keep the young girls in school, we don't want them dropping out at 14, 15 years old because they are becoming unwed mothers and they haven't even gotten halfway through high school. And yet the principal every 2 or 3 months has a different boyfriend. That's not a good example for those young girls that we're trying to help to be able to stay on the straight path, so to speak, and go ahead and get their education and hopefully find a good husband and get married before they start having little families. If the principal is somebody that feels that it's okay every 3 or 4 months to have another man hanging around her house. And that's an example of the kind of leadership that we don't need. I personally remember you made mention of the fact that a lot of these things are apparently recent occurrences, but I will tell you something, that this isn't all just recent, because when I was in high school back in the 50s, I never will forget, my ninth grade science teacher used to brag about having relations with this young man who was about 17, 18 years old on the football team. She used to brag in the class, telling the ninth graders that she was proud of the fact that she had this boyfriend who was in that same school, who was only probably about 17, maybe 18 years old. You know, and then not only did she brag about that, but she also bragged about the fact that she had an illicit relationship going on with the band leader who was married. But yet she was a leader for the children because we looked up to her for guidance as one of the adults that we were supposed to be given good instruction from. And so this has been going on for a long time, even though we know more about it now because of the mass media. But the point of it is that in selecting our leaders, well, I'll tell you one thing, and I'm going to be finished on this note. In order for you to get in a leadership position in the U.S. Navy, you have to pass a background investigation. You have to have a security clearance. They're not going to give you any important job in the Navy if you can't qualify for a security clearance. And one of the first things that they're going to look at is your moral character, your background that involves your moral character and your behavior going all the way back to when you were a child. And they'll go to your neighbors where you lived 10, 15, 20 years ago and ask them, how did you behave? And if somebody says that you were a bad person, that you did bad things, that could keep you from not only getting a security clearance, but might end up having you put out of the Navy. And you may not have ever been arrested, never been detained by the police, but if you had a reputation for having an immoral character, that could keep you from being able to serve in the military, especially in the Navy. You know, so another thing they look at is people that won't pay their bills. That's a quick way to get put out of the Navy. If you have a lot of complaints come to your commanding officer saying you made bills and you won't pay them, then they are obligated to counsel you. And if you don't straighten up, then they will process you out of the Navy because you won't be able to have a security clearance. So the leadership in the military is under a strong, strong scrutiny. in terms of moral character. When they do slip, and we have some top people over the last 230 years that have slipped, and I'm familiar with some of them. Not that I knew them personally, I knew of them, but they weren't like buddies of mine. But the fact is that we had some top people, admirals in the Navy and master sergeants and generals in the Army. They got fired because they had moral lapses, got put out of the Army after having had 25 or 30 years of good service, but that moral lapse caused them to have the military lose confidence in their ability to be examples. So I just wanted to mention that because of the fact that we do need to be careful. We need to inculcate in our young people understanding that the pattern of behavior that you have recorded, and today just about everything in your life is recorded, whether you know it or not, the pattern of behavior that you have recorded is going to cast a long shadow or a long beacon of light, depending on whether it's a good character or a bad one. So the leaders definitely need to be scrutinized, in my opinion, before we put them over our young people in particular. Does anyone want to comment on that? We're going to wrap up in just a minute, but to give anyone that wants to comment a chance, please go ahead.
I would like to just say that it seems that people who were born in the 1930s and maybe up until the 40s, they have a different mindset than people who were born, say, in the 50s. And I think it's because there was more of a moral character, even though we had issues with racism going on, people still had a moral conscience, and they wouldn't just do any kind of behavior in front of their children. And I was born in the 50s, but even then, those days, we were not allowed to say words like B-U-T, you know. That was a very offensive thing to say. I'm going to beat your butt. The mom would say, what did you say, girl? You know, and that's just nothing compared to what people say now. And language is a very language is, wow, communications and language is I don't know where we're going with I don't know anymore. It's hard. When you're trying to talk to your children, you got the TV talking to them, the radio, the whatever, and their friends. You know, it's just, it's, we're in bad shape. We're in very bad shape. Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, you answered the question, as I mentioned a few minutes ago. You did acknowledge that the moral character of America's leadership should be of concern to the citizens. Now, the next step is to be willing to confront those people who have a track record or some evidence of not being good personal examples for those people that they're leading, and asking them, have you straightened yourself out yet? Are you going to be doing what you were doing 20 years ago? Or did you get religion and now you're flying on the right path? Because if you still are going to be dipping and dabbing and running loose around the church, we don't need you to be the assistant pastor.
I think we need people who are going to teach our children that if your name is attached to it, even if you're chewing bubble gum, you better make sure you chew that bubble gum in a very excellent manner.
That's true.
And
I agree.
I think, and that's what we're missing. We're missing people striving for excellence and understanding that moral character comes along with being excellent. And I don't know how we're going to go about screening people, because these people are so deceptive now. Is I don't know anymore. Okay, thank
well,
you.
Yeah. Okay, I just want to mention this. We can talk about this for days and months to come, because it's an ongoing issue. It's not going to be solved overnight. But we certainly want to thank everyone who came on tonight to share your time with us to listen to our broadcast. And we hope that you'll join us not this coming Saturday, because we won't be on the air then, but the following Saturday. So may God bless all of you, for all of you who are Christians or who celebrate the Easter holiday, the remembrance, the holiday remembering the resurrection of Jesus Christ. We thank God that we have those of you who will take time out from your other activities and look towards the hills, so to speak, to have hearts of joy because of the fact that there is a resurrection, not just was a resurrection, but is a resurrection that God has promised. And that is a resurrection of the good morality and the good character that we hope that we live to see, because it has been promised among the people. There will be those, there will be leaders that will set the good examples, because their souls have been lifted up. And so that's what I celebrate when I look at this day called Easter. Not the Easter bunny, not the Easter egg, but the new birth of the spirit of godliness in the people. But for all of you, whether you're Christians and you celebrate traditionally the resurrection of Jesus Christ as you've been taught, or whether you're like me, somewhat of a New Age thinker, it celebrates the rebirth of the human spirit of excellence. May God bless all of you to have a pleasant and happy Easter, Easter Sunday, Easter weekend. So thank you very much and good night. Thank you.
day fun. You give me heat like no one ever done before. Close the door and take me to a wonderland of passion. Girl, you keep me going with magic. Ain't trying to make it hard, oh yeah, baby. Girl, you see your magic is driving me crazy. Your boy can wait. I wanna love ya until the sun.